Master Luhan gave him a pained look.
What those Trollocs did? My family wasn't killed by Trollocs,
Perrin said softly.
It was Padan Fain.
What?
Are you certain?
One of the White Cloaks told me,
Perrin said.
He wasn't lying.
Well then,
Luhan said.
Fain. He's still out there, isn't he?
Yes,
Perrin said.
He hates Rand. And there's another man, Lord Luke. You remember him? He's been ordered to kill Rand.
I think they're both going to try for him before this is over.
Then you'll have to make sure they don't succeed, won't you?
Perrin smiled, then turned toward the footsteps outside. Chiat entered a moment later, and he could smell her annoyance that he'd sensed her coming. Bane followed, another figure in complete white. And after them, Masuri. Not the Aes Sedai he would have chosen. Perrin felt his lips tighten.
You do not like me, Masuri said. I know this.
I have never said that,
Perrin replied.
You were a great help to me during our travels.
And yet you do not trust me. But that is beside the point. You wish to have your strength restored, and I am probably the only one willing to do it for you. The Wise Ones and the Yellows would paddle you like a babe for wanting to leave.
I know,
Perrin said, sitting down on the bed. He hesitated.
I need to know why you were meeting with Massima behind my back.
I come here to fulfill a request, Masuri said, smelling amused. And you tell me you won't let me do you that favor until I respond to interrogation?
Why'd you do it, Masuri?
Perrin said.
Out with it.
I planned to use him, the slender Aes Sedai said.
Use him?
Having influence with one who called himself the Prophet of the Dragon could have been useful.
She smelled embarrassed.
It was a different time, Lord Ebara. Before I knew you. Before any of us knew you.
Perrin grunted.
I was foolish, Masuri said. Is that what you wanted to hear? I was foolish, and I have since learned.
Perrin eyed her, then sighed, proffering his arm. It was still an Aes Sedai answer, but one of the straighter ones he had heard.
Do it, he said. And thank you.
She took his arm. He felt his fatigue evaporate, felt it get shoved back like an old quilt being stuffed into a small box. Perrin felt invigorated, strengthened, powerful again. He practically leaped as he came to his feet. Masuri sagged, sitting down on his bed. Perrin flexed his hand, looking down at his fist. He felt as if he could challenge anyone, even the Dark One himself.
That feels wonderful.
I've been told I excel at this particular weave, Masuri said. But be careful, it—
Yes, Perrin said. I know. The body is still tired. I just can't feel it.
And, as he considered, that last part wasn't exactly true. He could sense his fatigue, like a serpent deep within its hole, lurking and waiting. It would consume him again. That meant he had to finish his job first. He inhaled deeply, then summoned his hammer to him. It didn't move.
Right, he thought. This is the real world, not the wolf dream.
He walked over and slipped the hammer into its straps on his belt, the new ones that he had fashioned to hold the larger hammer. He turned toward Chiad, who stood by the doorway. He could smell Bane out there, too, where she'd retreated.
I will find him, Perrin said. If he is wounded, I will bring him here.
Do that, Chiad said. But you will not find us here.
You're going to Marilor?
Perrin asked, surprised.
Chiad said, Some of us are needed to bring the wounded in to be healed. It is not a thing Gai Shine have done in the past, but perhaps it is a thing we can do this time. Perrin nodded, then closed his eyes. He imagined himself close to sleep, drifting. His time in the wolf dream had trained his mind well. He could fool himself with concentration. That didn't change the world here, but it did change his perceptions. Yes, drifting close to sleep. And there was the pathway. He took the branch toward the wolf dream in the flesh and caught just a hint of a gasp from Missouri as he felt himself shift between worlds. He opened his eyes and dropped into buffeting winds. He created a pocket of calm air, then hit the ground beneath with strengthened legs. Only a few teetering walls remained of Berylaine's palace on this side. One of those broke apart, the stones shattering and pulled into the sky by the winds. The city beyond was mostly gone, heaps of rock here and there indicating where buildings had once stood. The sky groaned like bending metal. Perrin summoned his hammer into his hand, then began the hunt one last time. Tom Marilyn sat on a large, soot-blackened boulder smoking his pipe, watching the world end. He knew a thing or two about finding the best vantage to watch a performance. He judged this to be the finest seat in the world. His boulder was just next to the entrance into the Pit of Doom, close enough that if he leaned back and squinted, he could peer in and catch some of the lights and shadows playing inside. He glanced in. Nothing had changed.
"Stay safe in there, Maureen," he thought. "Please."
He was also close enough to the edge of the path to overlook the valley below. He puffed on his pipe, knuckling his mustache. Someone had to record this. He couldn't spend the entire time worrying about her. So he searched his mind for the right words to describe what he was seeing. He set aside words like epic and momentous. They were nearly worn out with overuse. A wave of wind blew through the valley, ruffling the cottonsore of Aiel fighting red-veiled enemies. Lightning surged, pounding at the dragon-sworn line holding the path up to the cave entrance. Those flashes sent men flying into the air. Then that lightning started striking at the Trollocs instead. The clouds went back and forth like that, the windfinders seizing control of the weather, the shadow taking it back. Neither side yet had managed a clear advantage for long. Hulking dark beasts ravaged the valley, killing with ease. The Darkhounds did not fall despite the work of dozens in concert. The right side of the valley was covered in a thick mist that, for some reason, the storm winds couldn't budge. Climactic? Tom thought, chewing on the stem of his pipe. No. Too expected. If you use the words people expected, they grew bored. A great ballad needed to be unexpected. Never be expected. When people start to expect you, when they started to anticipate your flourishes, to look for the ball you had hidden through sleight of hand, or to smile before you reached the twist line of your tail, it was time to pack up your cloak, bow once more for good measure, and stroll away. After all, that was what they'd least expect you to do when all was going well. He leaned back again, peering into the tunnel. He couldn't see her, of course. She was too far in. But he could feel her, in his mind, because of the bond. She stared at the end of the world with grit and determination. Despite himself, he smiled. Below, the battle churned like a meat grinder, ripping men and Trollocs into chunks of dead flesh. The Aiel fought at the periphery of the battlefield, engaging their shadow-taken cousins. They seemed to be evenly matched, or they had been before those Darkhounds arrived. They were relentless, though, these Aiel. They didn't seem tired at all, though it had been... Tom couldn't put his thumb on how much time had passed. He'd slept maybe 5 or 6 times since they'd come to Sheol Ghul, but he didn't know if that marked the days. He checked the sky. No sign of the sun, though the channeling of the windfinders and the bowl of the winds
had summoned a great line of white clouds to crash into the black ones. The clouds seemed to be having a battle of their own, a reverse image of the fighting below, black against white. Perilous, he thought. No, that wasn't the right word. He'd make a ballad of this for certain. Rand deserved it. Moiraine, too. This would be her victory as much as it was his. He needed words. The right words. He searched for them while he heard the Aiel beating spears against shields as they ran to battle, while he heard the howling wind inside the tunnel, and while he could feel her standing at the end. Below, the demonic crossbowmen cranked frantically. Once, thousands of them had been shooting. Now, only a fraction remained. Perhaps terrifying? That was a right word, but not the right word. It might not be unexpected, but it was very, very true. He felt it to his bone. His wife fighting for her life, the forces of light pushed almost to the brink of death. Light, but he was frightened. For her, for them all. But the word was pedestrian. He needed something better, something perfect. Below, the Tyrants thrust their polearms desperately at attacking Trollocs. The Dragonsworn fought with numerous types of weapons. One last steam wagon lay broken nearby, carrying arrows and bolts brought through the last gateway from Berlhon. They hadn't seen supplies in hours now. The distortion of time here, the Tempest, was doing things to the One Power. Tom took special note of the wagon. He would need to use it in a way that preserved its wonder, showing how its cold iron sides had deflected arrows before its fall. There was heroism in every line, in every pull of the bowstring, and every hand that held a weapon. How to convey that? But how also to convey the fear, the destruction, the sheer strangeness of it all? The day before, in an odd sort of bloody truce, both sides had paused to clear away bodies. He needed a word that gave the feel for the chaos, death, the cacophony, the sheer bravery. Below, a tired group of Aes Sedai began moving up the pathway to where Tom waited. They passed archers keenly scanning the battlefield for fades. Exquisite, Tom thought. That is the word. Unexpected but true. Majestically exquisite. No, not majestically. Let the word stand on its own. If it is the right word, it will work without help. If it's the wrong word, adding other words to it will just make it seem desperate. This was what the end should be like. The sky ripping apart as factions fought for control of the elements themselves. People from varied nations standing with their last strength. If the light won, it would do so by the narrowest of margins. That, of course, horrified him. A good emotion. It would have to go in the ballad. He drew on his pipe and knew that he did so to keep himself from trembling. Nearby, an entire side of the valley wall exploded, showering rock down upon the people fighting below. He didn't know which of the channelers had done that. They were forsaken on this battlefield. Tom tried to stay out of their way. "This is what you get, old man," he reminded himself, "for not knowing when to let go." He was glad that he'd not been able to escape, that his attempts to leave Rand, Matt, and the others behind had failed. Would he really have wanted to sit in some quiet inn somewhere while the last battle played out? While she went in there, alone? He shook his head. He was as much a fool as any man or woman. He just had enough experience to recognize it. It took a few seasons before a man could put that together. The approaching group of Aes Sedai broke apart, some remaining below, one limping tiredly up toward the cavern. Cadswain. There were fewer Aes Sedai here than there had been before. Casualties were mounting. Of course, most who had come here had known that death waited for them. This battle was the most desperate, and fighters here were the least likely to survive. Of every 10 who had come to Sheol Ghul to fight, only one still stood. Tom knew for a fact that old Rhodolite Heralda had sent a farewell letter to his wife before accepting this command. Just as well that he had. Cadswain nodded toward Tom, then continued on toward the cavern where Rand was fighting for the fate of the world. As soon as Herba fight, only one still stood. Tom knew for a fact that old Rhodolite Heralda had sent a farewell letter to his wife before accepting this command. Just as well that he had. Cadswain nodded toward Tom, then continued on toward the cavern where Rand was fighting for the fate of the world. As soon as her back was to Tom, he flipped a single knife, his other hand still holding the pipe in his mouth, through the air. It hit the Aes Sedai in the back, right in the middle, severing the spine. She dropped like a sack of potatoes. That's an overused term, it is, Tom thought, puffing on his pipe. A sack of potatoes? I'll need a different simile there. Besides, how often do sacks of potatoes drop? Not often. She dropped like what? Barley spilling from the ripped end of a sack, slumping to the ground in a heap? Yes, that worked better. As the Aes Sedai hit the ground, her weave faded, revealing another face behind the Cadswain mask she'd been using. He recognized this woman vaguely, a Damani. What was her name? Jayne Kaida. That was it. She was a pretty one. Tom shook his head. The walk had been all wrong. Didn't any of them realize that a person's walk was as distinctive as the nose on their face? Each woman who tried to slip past him assumed that changing her face and dress, maybe her voice, would be enough to fool him. He climbed off his perch and grabbed the corpse under the arms, then stuffed it in a hollow nearby. There were 5 bodies in there now, so it was getting crowded. He drew on his pipe and took his cloak off, placing it here so that it covered up the dead hand of the Black Sister, which was peeking out. He checked one more time down the tunnel. Though he could not see Moraine, it comforted him to look. Then he returned to his perch and took out a sheet of paper and his pen. And, to the thunder, the yells, the explosions, and the howl of the wind, he began to compose. Chapter 45 Tendrils of Mist. Dice tumbling in his head, Matt found Grady with Alvar and Noel on the heights. He carried Rand's bloody banner wrapped up in a small bundle under his arm. Bodies lay scattered around, fallen weapons and pieces of armor, and blood stained the rocks. But the fighting was done here, the place empty of foes. Noel smiled at Rand from horseback. Alvar rode in front of him, clutching the horn. Alvar looked exhausted from Grady's healing. The Ashaman stood beside the horse, but also seemed proud as could be at the same time. Noel, one of the heroes of the horn. It bloody made sense. Jayne Farstrider himself. Well, you wouldn't find Matt trading places with him. Noel might enjoy it, but Matt wouldn't dance at another man's command. Not for immortality itself, no, he wouldn't.
Grady, Matt said. You did a nice job upriver. That water came just when we needed it.
Grady's face was ashen as if he'd seen something he had not wanted to. He nodded.
What? What were...
I'll explain another time, Matt said. Right now, I need a bloody gateway.
Where to?
Grady asked. Matt took a deep breath, pulling up.
Sheol Ghul. And curse me for a fool.
Grady shook his head.
It can't happen, Cawthon.
You're too tired?
I am tired, Grady said. It isn't that. Something's happening at Sheol Ghul. Gateways open there are deflected. The pattern is warped, if that makes any sense. The valley isn't one location any longer but many, and a gateway can't pinpoint it.
Grady, Matt said. That made about as much sense to me as playing a harp with no fingers.
Traveling to Shale Ghoul don't work, Cawthon, Grady said with annoyance. Pick somewhere else.
How close can you send me?
Grady shrugged.
One of the scouting camps, a day's hike out, probably.
A day's hike out. The tugging pulled at Matt.
Matt, Ulver said, I think I need to go with you, don't I? To the Blight? Won't the heroes be needed to fight there?
That was a piece of it. The tugging was insufferable.
Bloody ashes, Rand. Leave me alone, you—
Matt stopped himself, a thought occurring to him. Scout camps.
One of those Seancham patrol camps, you mean?
Yes, Grady said. They've been sending us status reports on the battle up there, now that the gateways are unreliable.
Well, don't just sit there looking stupid, Matt said. Get a gateway open.
Come on, Ulver. We have some work to do.
Shai Som rolled onto the battlefield at Thakandar. So perfect. So pleasurable. His enemies were killing one another. And he had grown vast. His mind was in every tendril of mist that rolled down the side of the valley. The souls of Trollocs were, well, unsatisfying. Still, simple grain could be filling in plentitude. And Shai Som had consumed quite a number of them. His drones stumbled down the hillside, cloaked in mists. Trollocs with their skin pocked, as if it had boiled. Dead white eyes. He hardly needed them any longer, as their souls had given him fuel to rebuild himself. His madness had retreated. Mostly. Well, not mostly. Enough. He walked at the center of the bank of mist. He was not reborn yet, not completely. He would need to find a place to infest, a place where the barriers between worlds was thin. There he could seep his self into the very stones and embed his awareness into that location. The process would take years, but once it happened, he would become more difficult to kill. Right now, Shai Som was frail, this mortal form that walked at the center of his mind. He was bound to it. Fain it had been. Padan Fain. Still, he was vast. Those souls had given rise to much mist, and it, in turn, found others to feed upon. Men fought Shadowspawn before him. All would give him strength. His drones stumbled onto the battlefield, and immediately both sides took to fighting them. Shai Som quivered in joy. They did not see. They did not understand. The drones weren't there to fight. They were there to distract. As the battle proceeded, he trailed his essence down in misty tendrils, then began stabbing it through the bodies of fighting men and Trollocs. He took Murdral, converted them, used them. Soon this entire army would be his. He needed that strength in case his ancient enemy, his dear friend, decided to attack him. Those two friends, those two enemies, were occupied with one another. Excellent. Shai Som continued his attack, striking down enemies on both sides and consuming them. Some tried to attack him by running into his mists, his embrace. Of course, that killed them. This was his true self. He had tried to create this mist before, as Fain, but he had not been mature enough. They could not reach him. No living thing could withstand his mist. Once it had been a mindless thing. It had not been him. But it had been trapped with him, inside of a seed carried away. And that death, that wonderful death, had been given fertile ground in the flesh of a man. The three entwined within him. Mist, man, master. That wonderful dagger, his physical form carried it now, had grown something delightful and new and ancient all at once. So the mist was him, but the mist was also not him. Mindless, but it was his body, and it carried his mind. Wonderfully, with those clouds in the sky, he did not have to worry about the sun burning him away. So nice of his old enemy to welcome him so. His physical form laughed at the heart of the creeping mists, while his mind, the mists themselves, gloried in how perfect everything was. This place would become his, but only after he had feasted upon Randall Thor, the strongest soul of them all. What a wonderful celebration! Gaul clung to the rocks outside the Pit of Doom. The winds ripped at him, driving sand and chips of rock against his body, slicing gashes in his skin. He laughed at the vortex of blackness above.
"Do your worst," he shouted upward. "I have lived in the threefold land. I had heard the last battle would be grand, not a stroll to my mother's roof picking sim blossoms."
The winds blew harder, as if in retribution, but Gaul flattened himself against the stone, giving the winds no purchase on him. He'd lost his shufa, it had blown free, so he had tied part of his shirt over his lower face. He held one spear. The others were gone, broken or pulled away. He crawled toward the opening to the cavern, which lay exposed, a thin veil of purple barring the way forward. A figure in dark leather appeared in front of the opening. Near this man, the winds stilled. Eyes squinting against the storm, Gaul crawled silently up behind the man and thrust his spear forward. Slayer spun with a curse, turning aside the spear with an arm suddenly as strong as steel.
"Burn you," he shouted at Gaul. "Stay still for once."
Gaul jumped back, and Slayer came for him. But the wolves arrived. Gaul withdrew and faded into the rocks. Slayer was very powerful here. But what he could not see, he could not kill. The wolves harried Slayer until he vanished. There were hundreds of them here in this valley, roving through the winds. Slayer had killed dozens. Gaul whispered a farewell to another who had fallen in this attack. He could not speak to them as Perrin Ibarra did, but they were spear brothers. Gaul crawled slowly, carefully. His clothing and skin matched the color of the rocks. It felt right for them to be that way, so they were. The wolves and he could probably not defeat this slayer, but they could try. Try hard. How long had it been since Perrin Ibarra had left? 2 hours, perhaps?
"If the shadow has claimed you, my friend," he thought, "I pray you spat in the sight blinder's eye before you awoke."
Slayer appeared on the rocks again, but Gaul did not crawl forward. The man had sent decoys before, made only of rock. This figure did not move. Gaul looked about, carefully, slowly, as several wolves appeared near the decoy. They sniffed it. It started killing them. Gaul cursed, breaking out of his hiding place. This, apparently, was what Slayer had been wanting. Slayer launched a spear, one of Gaul's own. It hit Gaul in the side. Gaul grunted, falling to his knees. Slayer laughed, then raised his hands. A jet of air blew out from him, flinging wolves away. Gaul could barely hear the whimpers over the rushing wind.
"Here!"
Slayer screamed into the tempest.
"I am a king! Here I am more than the Forsaken. This place is mine, and I will..."
Perhaps the pain of Gaul's wound was addling him. He thought that the winds were starting to die down.
"Here I will..."
The winds stopped. The entire valley grew silent. Slayer stiffened, then turned worried eyes toward the cavern beyond. Nothing there seemed to have changed.
"You are not a king," a soft voice said.
Gaul twisted about. A figure stood on a rocky protrusion behind him, wearing the greens and browns of a Two Rivers woodsman. His deep green cloak rippled faintly from the stilling winds. Perrin stood with his eyes closed, chin raised at a slight angle, as if toward the sun above, though if there was one, it was blocked by clouds.
"This place belongs to the wolves," Perrin said. "Not to you, not to me, not to any man. You cannot be a king here, Slayer. You have no subjects, and you never will."
"Insolent pup!" Slayer snarled. "How many times must I kill you?"
Perrin drew in a deep breath.
"I laughed when I found that Fane had killed your family," Slayer yelled. "I laughed! I was supposed to kill him, you know. The Shadow thinks him wild and rogue. But he's not the first one who has managed to do something meaningful to bring you pain."
Perrin said nothing.
"Luke wanted to be part of something important," Slayer shouted. "In that we're the same, though I sought the ability to channel. The Dark One cannot grant that, but he found something different for us, something better. Something that requires a soul to be melded with something else. Like what happened with you, Ebara. Like you."
"We are nothing alike, Slayer," Perrin said softly.
"But we are. That's why I laughed. And you know, there's a prophecy about Luke? That he'll be important to the last battle. That's why we're here. We'll kill you, then we'll kill Althor, just like we killed that wolf of yours."
Standing on the rocky protrusion, Perrin opened his eyes. Gaul pulled back. Those golden eyes glowed like beacons. The storm started again, and yet that tempest seemed mild compared to the one Gaul saw in Perrin's eyes. Gaul felt a pressure from his friend, like the pressure of the sun at noon after 4 days without having any water to drink. Gaul stared up at Perrin for a few moments, then held a hand against his wound and ran. The wind whipped at Matt as he clung to the saddle of a winged beast, hundreds of feet in the air.
"Oh, blood and bloody ashes!"
Matt yelled, one hand on his hat, the other clutching the saddle. He was tied in with some straps. Two little leather straps. Far too thin. Could they not have used more? Maybe 10 or 20? He would have been fine with 100. Morat Tohrakan were bloody insane. Every one of them. They did this every day. What was wrong with them? Tied into the saddle in front of Matt, Alvar laughed with glee. "Poor lad," Matt thought. "He's so frightened he's going mad. The lack of air up here is getting to him."
"There it is, my prince,"
the Morat Tohrakan Sulan called to him from her place at the front of the flying beast. She was a pretty thing. Completely insane, too.
"We've reached the valley. Are you sure you want to set down in there?"
"No,"
Matt shouted.
"Good answer."
The woman made her beast swoop.
"Blood and bloody!"
Alvar laughed. The Tohrakan brought them down over a long valley clogged with a frenzied battle. Matt tried to let his attention settle on the fighting, rather than on the fact that he was in the air flying on a lizard with two bloody lunatics. Heaps of Trolloc bodies told the story as well as any map could have. The Trollocs had burst through defenses at the valley mouth behind Matt. He flew over that, toward the mountain of Shale Ghul ahead, valley walls to his right and left. It was mayhem below. Roving bands of Aiel and Trollocs moved through the valley, striking at each other here and there. Some soldiers, not Aiel, defended the way up to the Pit of Doom, but that was the only organized formation Matt could see. Along the side of the valley, a deep mist had begun to flood down onto its floor. At first, Matt was confused, thinking it had come from the heroes of the Horn. But no, the horn was strapped to the saddle, beside Matt's Ashandarai. And this mist was too silvery, if that was the right word. He thought he'd seen that mist before. Then Matt felt something from that mist. A prickling cold sensation followed by what he swore was whispering in his mind. He knew immediately what it was. Oh, light.
Matt, look!
Oliver called, pointing.
Wolves!
A group of jet-black animals, almost as large as horses, were assaulting the soldiers defending the path up to Shael Ghul. The wolves were making quick work of the men. Light, as if things had not been difficult enough.
Those aren't wolves, Matt said grimly.
The wild hunt had come to Thakandar. Maybe they and Mashadar would destroy one another? Was that too much to hope for? With the dice tumbling in his head, Matt was not going to bet on it. Rand's forces, what was left of the Aiel, Damane, Dragonsworn, and Tyran soldiers who had come here, would be crushed by the Darkhounds. If they survived, Mashadar would take them. They could not fight either one. That voice in there. It wasn't just Mashadar, the mindless mist. Fane was here somewhere, too. And the dagger. Shael Ghul loomed above. High in the air, clouds churned. Surprisingly, some white thunderheads had rolled in from the south, colliding with the black as they spun together. Actually, those two together looked an awful lot like the... The Tohrakan turned and winged about, then swooped down lower, maybe only 100 feet off the ground.
"Be careful!" Matt hollered, holding onto his hat. "Are you bloody trying to kill us?"
"Apologies, my prince," the woman yelled back. "I just need to find a safe place to put you down."
"A safe place?" Matt said. "Good luck on that."
"It's going to be difficult. Dana is strong, but I..."
A black-fletched arrow grazed the side of Sulan's head, loosed from somewhere down below, along with a flight of a dozen others that zipped around Matt, one hitting the wing of the Tohrakan. Matt cursed, dropping his hat and reaching for Sulan as Ulver cried out in shock. Sulan went limp, dropping the reins. Below, a group of red-veiled Aiel prepared another volley. Matt undid his straps. He leaped, well, more crawled, over Ulver and the unconscious woman and grabbed the reins of the panicked Tohrakan. This could not be too much harder than riding a horse, could it? He pulled as he had seen Sulan do, turning the Tohrakan as arrows cut the air behind them, several taking the beast in the wings. They veered straight toward the rock wall, and Matt found himself on his feet, standing on the saddle and gripping the reins tightly as he tried to keep the wounded beast from bloody killing them all. That turn nearly tossed him free, but he held himself in place with feet wedged and holding the reins even tighter. The rush of air as they turned caught up Ulver's next words. The creature's badly wounded wings beat wildly, and it screeched wretchedly. Matt was not certain either of them were in control, as the beast twisted toward the ground. They hit the floor of the valley in a heap. Bones cracked. Like Matt hoped, they belonged to the Tohrakan, and he found himself tumbling end over end across the broken ground. He finally came to a rest, flopping over. He breathed in and out, stunned by it all.
"That," he finally groaned, "is the bloody worst idea I've ever had."
He hesitated. Maybe the second worst. He had decided to kidnap Tuan, after all. He stumbled to his feet, and his legs still seemed to work. He did not limp too badly as he ran to the twitching Tohrakan.
"Ulver? Ulver!"
He found the boy still tied in the saddle, blinking and shaking his head to clear it.
"Matt," Ulver said, "next time I think you should let me fly it. I don't think you did a very good job."
"If there is a next time," Matt said, "I'll eat a whole bag of Tarvalan gold."
He yanked free the ties holding his Ashandarai and Ulver's horn, then handed the instrument to the boy. He reached for the pack with Rand's banner, which he'd carried tied at his waist, but it was gone. Panicked, Matt looked about.
The banner! I dropped the bloody banner!
Ulver smiled, looking up at the sign made by the swirling clouds.
It will be fine. We're beneath his banner already, he said,
then lifted the horn and blew a beautiful note. Chapter 46 To Awaken. Rand broke free from the darkness and entered the pattern fully again. From his watching of the pattern, he knew that although only minutes had passed here since he'd entered, in the valley outside this cavern, days had passed, and farther out into the world, it had been much longer. Rand threw Moradin back from the position they'd held during those tense minutes with blades locked. Still full of the one power, so sweet, Rand whipped the blade of Kalendor at his old friend. Moradin got his sword up in time to block, but only barely. He growled, pulling a knife from his belt and stepping back into a knife and sword stance.
You don't matter any longer, Aelon, Rand said, the torrent of Saiyadin raging within him. Let us finish this.
I don't, Moradin laughed.
Then he spun and threw the knife at Elana.
Nynaeve watched in horror as the knife spun through the air. The winds didn't touch it for some reason. No! After she had coaxed the woman back to life. I cannot lose her now. Nynaeve tried to catch the knife or block it, but she moved just a hair too slowly. The knife buried itself in Alana's breast. Nynaeve looked at it, horrified. This was not a wound that sewing and herbs could heal. That blade hit the heart. Rand! I need the one power! Nynaeve cried. It's all right, Alana whispered. Nynaeve looked at the woman's eyes. She was lucid. The Andalay, Nynaeve realized, remembering the herb she'd used to give the woman strength. It brought her out of her stupor. It awakened her. I can, Alana said. I can release him. The light faded from her eyes. Nynaeve looked at Moradin and Rand. Rand glanced at the dead woman with pity and sorrow, but Nynaeve saw no rage in his eyes. Alana had released the bond before Rand could feel the effects of her death. Moradin turned back to Rand, another knife in his left hand. Rand raised Kalendor to strike Moradin down. Moradin dropped his sword and stabbed his own right hand with the knife. Rand twitched suddenly and Kalendor dropped from his grip as if his hand somehow hurt from Moradin's attack. The glow emanating from the blade winked out, and the crystalline blade rang as it hit the ground.
Perrin did not hold back in the fight with Slayer. He did not try to distinguish between wolf and man. He finally let everything out, every bit of rage at Slayer, every bit of pain at the deaths of his family, pressures which had been growing inside him unnoticed for months. He let it out. Light he let it out. As he had on that terrible night when he'd killed those white cloaks. Ever since then, he'd clamped a firm grip on himself and his emotions, just as Master Luhan had said. He could see it now, in a frozen moment. Gentle Perrin, always afraid of hurting someone, a blacksmith who had learned control. He had rarely let himself strike with all of his strength. This day he took the leash off the wolf. It had never belonged there anyway. The storm conformed to his rage. Perrin didn't try to keep it back. Why would he? It matched his emotions perfectly. The fall of his hammer was like claps of thunder, the flashing of his eyes like lightning bolts. Wolves howled alongside the wind. Slayer tried to fight back. He jumped, he shifted, he stabbed. Each time Perrin was there, jumping at him as a wolf, swinging at him as a man, buffeting him like the tempest itself. Slayer got a wild look in his eyes. He raised a shield, trying to put it between himself and Perrin. Perrin attacked. Without thought now, he became instinct only. Perrin roared, smashing his hammer into that shield time and time again, driving Slayer before him, beating the shield like a stubborn length of iron, pounding away his anger, his fury. His last blow threw Slayer back and flung the shield from the man's hands, sending it spinning 100 feet in the air. Slayer hit the valley floor and rolled, gasping. He came to rest in the middle of the battlefield, shadowy figures rising all around him and dying as they fought in the real world. He looked at Perrin with panic, then vanished. Perrin sent himself into the waking world to follow. He appeared amid the battle, Aiel against Trollocs in a furious fight. The winds were surprisingly strong on this side, and black clouds spun above Shale Ghul, which rose like a crooked finger into the sky. The nearby Aiel barely took time to notice him. The bodies of Trollocs and humans lay in heaps across the battlefield, and the place stank of death. The ground had once been dusty here, but now it churned with mud made from the blood of the fallen. Slayer pushed through a group of Aiel nearby, growling, slashing with his long knife. He didn't look back, and it didn't seem that he knew Perrin had followed him into the real world. A new wave of shadow spawn pushed in off the slope, out of a silvery white mist. Their skin looked strange, pocked with holes, their eyes milky white. Perrin ignored these and barreled after Slayer.
"Young Bull!"
Wolves.
"The Shadow Brothers are here. We fight."
Darkhounds. Wolves hated all shadow spawn. An entire pack would die pulling down a Murdrawl. But Darkhounds they feared. Perrin looked around to spot the creatures. Ordinary men could not fight Darkhounds, whose mere saliva was death. Nearby, the human forces broke before a tide of black wolves the size of horses. The Wild Hunt. Light. Those Darkhounds were enormous. Scores of the jet-black, corrupted wolves ripped through the defensive lines, throwing Tyran and Damani soldiers about as if they were rag dolls. Wolves attacked the Darkhounds, but in vain. They screamed and howled and died. Perrin raised his voice alongside their cries of death, a ragged yell of rage. For the moment, he could not help. His instincts and passions drove him. Slayer. He had to defeat Slayer. If Perrin did not stop Slayer, the man would shift to the world of dreams and kill Rand. Perrin turned and ran through the fighting armies, chasing after the distant figure ahead. Slayer had gained a lead by Perrin's distraction, but the man had slowed a little. He had not yet realized that Perrin could leave the world of dreams. Ahead, Slayer stopped and inspected the battlefield. He glanced back and saw Perrin. Then his eyes widened. Perrin couldn't hear his words over the din, but could read Slayer's lips as he whispered,
"No. No, it can't be."
"Yes," Perrin thought.
"I can follow you now wherever you run. This is a hunt. You, finally, are the prey."
Slayer vanished and Perrin shifted into the wolf dream after him. The people fighting around him became patterns in the dust, exploding and reforming. Slayer yelled in fright at seeing him, then shifted back into the waking world. Perrin did likewise. He could smell Slayer's trail. Slick with sweat, panicked. To the dream, then to the waking world again. In the dream, Perrin ran on 4 legs as Young Bull. In the waking world, he was Perrin, hammer held aloft. He shifted back and forth between the two as frequently as he blinked, chasing Slayer. When he hit a patch of fighting bodies, he would jump into the wolf dream and crash through the figures made of sand and blown dust, then shift back into the waking world to keep on the trail. The shifting started to happen so quickly he flickered between the two with each heartbeat. Thump! Perrin raised his hammer, leaping off a small ridge after the scrambling form ahead. Thump! Young Bull howled, summoning the pack. Thump! Perrin was close now, only a few steps behind. Slayer's odor was pungent. Thump! The spirits of wolves appeared around Young Bull, howling their thirst for the hunt. Never had a prey deserved it more. Never had a prey done more damage to the packs. Never had a man been more feared. Thump! Slayer stumbled. He twisted as he fell, sending himself to the wolf dream by reflex. Thump! Perrin swung Mahalanir, emblazoned with the leaping wolf. He who soars. Thump. Young Bull leaped for the throat of the killer of his brothers. Slayer fled. The hammer connected. Something about this place, this moment, sent Perrin and Slayer into a spiraling series of flickers between worlds. Back and forth, flashes of moments and thoughts. Flicker, flicker, flicker. Men died around them, some of dust, some of flesh. Their world alongside shadows of other worlds. Men in strange clothing and armor, fighting beasts of all shapes and sizes. Moments where the Aiel became Shonchan, who became something between the two, with spears and light eyes, but helmets shaped like monstrous insects. In all of those moments, in all of those places, Perrin's hammer struck, and Young Bull's fangs grabbed Slayer by the neck. He tasted the salty warmth of Slayer's blood in his mouth. He felt the hammer vibrate as it hit, and he heard bones crack. The worlds flashed like bolts of lightning. Everything crashed, shook, then pulled together. Perrin stood on the rocks in the valley of Thakandar, and Slayer's body crumpled in front of him, head crushed. Perrin panted, the thrill of the hunt clinging to him. It was over. He turned, surprised to find that he was surrounded by Aiel. He frowned at them.
"What are you doing?"
One of the maidens laughed.
"You looked like you were running to a great dance, Perrin Ebarra. One learns to watch for warriors like you on the battlefield and follow. They often have the most fun."
He smiled grimly, surveying the battlefield. It was not going well for his side. The Darkhounds ripped apart the defenders in a ruthless frenzy. The way up to Rand was completely exposed.
"Who commands this battle?" Perrin asked.
"Nobody now," the maiden said. He did not know her name. "Rodolai Toralda did first. Then Darlin Cisnera led, but his command post fell to Drakkar. I have not seen any Aes Sedai or clan chiefs in hours."
Her voice was grim. Even the stalwart Aiel were flagging. A quick scan of the battlefield showed Perrin that the remaining Aiel fought wherever they were, often in small groups, doing as much harm as they could before being cut down. The wolves who had fought here in packs were broken, their sendings those of pain and fear, and Perrin didn't know what those shadow spawn with the pocked faces meant. The battle was finished, and the sight of light had lost. The Darkhounds broke through the line of dragons sworn nearby, the last group who held falling before them. A few tried to flee, but one of the Darkhounds leapt on them, pushing several to the ground and gnawing one. Frothing saliva sprayed across the others, and they dropped, twitching. Perrin lowered his hammer, then knelt, pulling off Slayer's cloak and wrapping the cloth around his hands as he picked up his hammer again.
"Don't let their spittle touch your skin. It is deadly."
The Aiel nodded, those with bare hands wrapping them. They smelled of determination, but also resignation. Aiel would run toward death if it was the only option, and would laugh while doing so. Wetlanders thought them mad, but Perrin could smell the truth on them. They were not mad. They did not fear death, but they did not welcome it.
"Touch me, all of you," Perrin said.
The Aiel did so. He shifted them to the wolf dream. Taking so many was a strain, like bending a bar of steel, but he managed it. He immediately shifted them to the path up to the Pit of Doom. The spirits of wolves gathered here, silent. Hundreds of them. Perrin brought the Aiel back to the waking world, his shift placing him and his small force between Rand and the Darkhounds. The Wild Hunt looked up, corrupted eyes shining like silver as they fixed on Perrin.
"We will hold here," Perrin said to his Aiel, "and hope that some others aid us."
"We will stand," one of the Aiel said,
a tall man wearing one of those headbands marked with Rand's symbol.
"And if we do not," another said, "and we wake instead, then we will at least water the earth with our blood and let our bodies nourish the plants that will now grow here."
Perrin had barely noticed the plants growing, incongruously, green and vibrant in the valley. Small, but strong. A manifestation of the fact that Rand still fought. The Darkhounds slunk toward them, tails down, ears back, fangs exposed, gleaming like blood-stained metal. What was that he heard over the wind? Something very soft, very distant. It seemed so soft that he shouldn't have noticed it, but it pierced through the clamor of war. Faintly familiar.
"I know that sound," Perrin said.
"Sound?" the Aiel maiden said. "What sound? The calls of the wolves?"
"No,"
Perrin said as the Darkhounds began to lope up the path.
"The Horn of Valyr."
The heroes would come, but upon which battlefield would they fight? Perrin could expect no relief here, except...
"Lead us, young bull."
Why must the heroes all be human? A howl rose in the same pitch as that of the sounded horn. He looked upon a field suddenly filled with a multitude of glowing wolves. They were great pale beasts, the size of Darkhounds. The spirits of those wolves who had died, then gathered here, waiting for the sign, waiting for the chance to fight. The horn had called them. Perrin let loose a yell of his own, a howl of pleasure, then charged forward to meet the Darkhounds. The last hunt had finally, truly arrived. Matt left Alver with the heroes again. The boy looked like a prince, riding in front of Noel as they attacked the Trollocs and prevented anyone from climbing that path to kill Rand. Matt borrowed a horse from one of the defenders who still had one, then galloped over to find Perrin. His friend would be among those wolves, of course. Matt did not know how those hundreds of big, glowing wolves had entered the battlefield, but he was not going to complain. They met the wild hunt head-on, snarling and savaging the Darkhounds. Howls from both sides flooded Matt's ears. He passed Samael fighting a Darkhound, but the people did not stand a chance. They tripped the beast, hacking at it, but it pulled back together as if it were made of darkness and not flesh, then ripped into them. Blood and bloody ashes. Those Aiel weapons did not even seem to scratch it. Matt continued galloping, avoiding the tendrils of silvery mist making their way across the whole valley. Light. That mist was approaching the path up to Rand. It was picking up speed, rolling over Aiel, Trollocs, and Darkhounds alike. There, Matt thought, picking out a man fool enough to fight Darkhounds. Perrin slammed his hammer down on a Darkhound's head, cracking it and forcing it into the ground. When he raised his hammer, it trailed smoke behind it. The Darkhound, amazingly, remained dead. Perrin turned, then stared.
"Matt," he called, "what are you doing here?"
"Coming to help," Matt said, "against my bloody better judgment."
"You can't fight Darkhounds, Matt," Perrin said as Matt rode up beside him. "I can, and so can the last hunt."
He cocked his head, then looked toward the sound of the horn. "No," Matt said, "I didn't sound it. That bloody burden has passed to someone who actually seems to enjoy it."
"It's not that, Matt,"
Perrin stepped up, reaching and taking him by the arm as he sat mounted.
"My wife, Matt. Please. She had the horn."
Matt looked down, feeling grim. "The lad said, like Perrin Fael was at Marilor, and led the Trollocs away from Alver so he could escape with the horn."
"Then she could still be alive,"
Perrin said. "Yes, of course she could," Matt said. What else could he say? "Perrin, you need to know something else. Fain is here on this battlefield."
"Fain?"
Perrin growled.
"Where?"
"He's in that mist. Perrin, he's brought Mashadar somehow. Don't let it touch you."
"I was in Shadar Logos too, Matt," Perrin said. "I have a debt to settle with Fain."
"And I don't," Matt said. "I..." Perrin's eyes opened wide. He stared at Matt's chest. There, a small white ribbon of silvery mist, Mashadar's mist, had speared Matt from behind through the chest. Matt looked at it, jerked once, then tumbled off his horse.
Chapter 47. Watching the flow writhe. Avienda struggled on the slopes of the valley of Thakandar, trying to avoid the shield of spirit Grendel was attempting to slip into place, a weave like lace defying her attempts to reach for the one power. Her feet ruined, she could not stand. She lay in pain, barely able to move. She fought it off, but barely. The Forsaken leaned against the rocks of the ledge, as she had been doing for a short time, muttering to herself. Her side bled bright red blood. Below them in the valley the battle raged. A silvery white mist was rolling across the dead and some of the living. Avienda tried to crawl toward her gateway. That lay open still, and through it she could see the valley floor. Something must have drawn Cadswain and the others away. Either that or Avienda had made the gateway to the wrong place. The glow of Sidar surrounded Grendel again. More weaves. Avienda broke them, but they delayed her progress toward the gateway. Grendel groaned, then pulled herself upright. She staggered in Avienda's direction, though the woman looked dazed by her blood loss. Avienda could do little to defend herself, weak as she was from blood loss. She was helpless. Except the weave for her gateway, the one she had tied off, it still hung there, holding the portal open, ribbons of lace. Carefully, hesitant but desperate, Avienda reached out mentally and pulled one of the threads loose in the gateway. She could do it. The flow shivered and vanished. It was something the Aiel did, but something Aes Sedai thought terribly dangerous. The results could be unpredictable. An explosion, a small shower of sparks. Avienda could end up stilled. Or maybe nothing at all would happen. When Elaine had tried it, it had caused a devastating explosion. That would be fine with her. If she brought down one of the Forsaken alongside her, that would be a wonderful death. She had to try. Grendel stopped near Avienda and grumbled to herself, eyes closed. Then the woman opened her eyes and began crafting another weave. Compulsion. Avienda picked faster, pulling 2, 3, half a dozen threads free of the gateway. Almost, almost.
What are you doing? Grendel demanded.
Avienda picked faster, and in her haste picked at the wrong thread. She froze, watching the flow writhe, setting off the others near it. Grendel hissed and began to set the compulsion on Avienda. The gateway exploded in a flash of light and heat.
Shysom seized the battlefield, his mist shoving through those wolves and men who thought to bar his way to Al'Thor. Yes, Al'Thor. The one he would kill, destroy, feast upon. Yes, Al'Thor. Something trembled at one edge of his senses. Shysom hesitated, frowning to himself. What was wrong there? A piece of him had stopped sensing. What was this? He ran his physical form across the ground through the mist. Blood trailed from his fingers, flayed by the dagger he carried, the wonderful seed, the last bit of his old self. He came upon a corpse, one that his mists had killed. Shysom frowned, bending down. That body looked familiar. The corpse's hand reached up and grabbed Shysom by the throat. He gasped, thrashing, as the corpse opened its eye. "There's an odd thing about diseases, I once heard, Fane," Matrim Coffin whispered. "Once you catch a disease and survive, you can't get it again." Shysom thrashed, panicked. No, no, this was not how a meeting with an old friend should go. He clawed at the hand holding him, then realized with horror that he'd dropped the dagger. Hothan pulled him down, slamming him to the ground. Shaisam called for his drones.
Too late. Too slow.
I've come to give you your gift back, Mordith, Hothan whispered. I consider our debt paid in full.
Hothan rammed the dagger right between the ribs into Shaisam's heart. Tied to this pitiful mortal form, Mordith screamed. Padan Fain howled and felt his flesh melting from his bones. The mists trembled, began to swirl and shake. Together, they died. Perrin shifted to the wolf dream and found Gaul by tracing the scent of blood. He had hated to leave Mac with Mashadar, but was confident, from a look Matt had given him after falling, that his friend could survive the mist and knew what he was doing. Gaul had hidden himself well, pushed up into a split in the rock just outside the Pit of Doom. Gaul still carried one spear and had darkened his clothing to match the rocks around him. He was nodding off when Perrin found him. Gaul was not only wounded, but had been in the wolf dream far too long. If Perrin felt an aching exhaustion, it must be worse for Gaul.
Come, Gaul, Perrin said,
helping him out of the rocks. Gaul looked dazed.
Nobody passed me by, he mumbled. I watched, Perrin Ibarra. The Karakarn is safe. You did well, my friend, Perrin replied. Better than anyone could have expected. You have much honor.
Gaul smiled as he leaned on Perrin's shoulder.
I worried. When the wolves vanished, I worried. They fight on in the waking world.
Perrin felt a need to return here. Finding Gaul had been part of that, but there was something else. A drive he couldn't explain.
Hold on, Perrin said, grabbing Gaul about the waist.
He shifted them to the field of Marilor, then shifted them out of the wolf dream and appeared in the center of the Two Rivers camp. People immediately locked on Perrin, yells rising.
Like Perrin,
a man said nearby. Grady rushed up, deep bags beneath his eyes.
I nearly burned you to char, Lord Golden Eyes. How did you appear like that?
Perrin shook his head, setting Gaul down. Grady eyed the wound in the man's side, then called for one of the Aes Sedai to handle the healing. They bustled around, some of the Two Rivers men calling out that Lord Golden Eyes had returned. Fael. Fael had been here at Marilor with the horn.
I have to find her.
Rand was alone, unguarded in the wolf dream.
Burn it. That doesn't matter, Perrin thought. If I lose Fael...
If Rand died, he would lose Fael. And everything else. They were still Forsaken out there. Perrin wavered. He had to go look for her, didn't he? Wasn't that his duty as her husband? Couldn't someone else look after Rand? But if not him, then who? Though it ripped him apart, Perrin sought the wolf dream one last time. Moradin scooped Kalendor up off the floor. It burst alight with the one power. Rand stumbled away, holding his aching hand to his chest. Moradin laughed, raising the weapon high.
You are mine, Luz Theron. You are finally mine. I...
He trailed off, then looked up at the sword, perhaps in awe.
It can amplify the true power. A true power, Sahungriel? How? Why?
He laughed louder. A maelstrom churned above them.
Channeling the true power is death here, Aelon, Rand yelled. It will burn you to a cinder.
It is oblivion, Moradin yelled. I will know that release, Luz Theron. I will take you with me.
The sword's glow turned a violent crimson. Rand could feel the power emanating from Moradin as he drew in the true power. This was the most dangerous part of the plan. Min had figured it out. Kalendor had such flaws, such incredible flaws. created so that a man using it needed women to control him, created so that if Rand used it, others could take control of him. Why was Rand to need a weapon with such flaws? Why did the prophecies mention it so? A Saangreal for the true power. Why would he ever need such a thing? The answer was so simple.
Now!
Rand yelled. Nynaeve and Moiraine channeled together, exploiting the flaw in Kalendor as Moradin tried to bring it to bear against Rand. Wind whipped in the tunnel, the ground quivered, and Moradin yelled, eyes going wide. They took control of him. Kalendor was flawed. Any man using it could be forced to link with women to be placed in their control. A trap. And one he used on Moradin.
Link!
Rand commanded. They fed it to him. Power. Sayadar from the women, the true power from Moradin, Sayadin from Rand. Moradin's channeling the true power here threatened to destroy them all, but they buffered it with Sayadin and Sayadar, then directed all three at the Dark One. Rand punched through the darkness there and created a conduit of light and darkness, turning the Dark One's own essence upon him. Rand felt the Dark One beyond, his immensity, space, size, time. Rand understood how these things could be irrelevant now. With a bellow, three powers coursing through him, blood streaming down his side, the Dragon Reborn raised a hand of power and seized the Dark One through the boar like a man reaching through water to grab the prize at the river's bottom. The Dark One tried to pull back, but Rand's claw was gloved by the true power. The enemy could not taint Sayadin again. The Dark One tried to withdraw the true power from Moradin, but the conduit flowed too freely,